sunny East Bay of San Francisco, and welcome to Your Life, Your IT Life. IT Life is the radio show for you, the IT pro, the tech leader, the futurist, the geek, and the maker. Every Wednesday at 3 p.m. Eastern, we invite a guest to talk about only the topics most important to your IT life. I'm your host, Executive Editor Dave Wagner, and welcome to today's show, Leadership Lessons for Women and Everyone Else. That's right, we're talking leadership, that slippery word everybody thinks they understand and no one can define. To help us get a much better handle on leadership in general, and specifically what it means for women, we have Deborah McLaughlin. Deborah McLaughlin is the best-selling author of The Renegade Leader, 9 Success Strategies Driven Leaders Use to Ignite People, Performance, and Profits. Her new book, Running in High Heels, How to Lead with Influence, Impact, and Ingenuity, is a how-to leadership companion for women in business. She is also the CEO of the Renegade Leader Coaching and Consulting Group. Welcome, Deborah.
Happy to be here, Dave.
Great. Well, let's get started with the elephant in the room. In case it isn't obvious, I'm a man, you're a woman. Do we lead differently, and should we?
Well, the question, I think the bigger question is, how should we lead today? But to answer your question, yes, it has been very typical that men and women lead differently. And really, if you think back to how we learn about leadership, it's often done through modeling. And since men have been in the workplace, you know, far more years than women, the models that they looked at were, you know, predominantly the control and command type of style, you know, dating back from way back when. And women tend to learn from the models that they're given, which is more about, you know, being in collaboration, working together as a team, and being able to, you know, have the answers through your people instead of from a place of authority. So both lead differently based upon that training, but in truth, there's a whole different way of leading that is much more effective for both men and women.
Great. Well, I'm sure we're going to talk about that for the entire half an hour, but why don't you give me a taste? How should we lead? What's the most effective way to think about leadership?
Well, first of all, yes, I wrote the book Running in High Heels, and the heels are kind of a metaphor. You know, you probably wear your wingtips. Other people wear their flats or their ballet slipper, but it's really about being comfortable in your own shoes. And so the best way of leading is really the way of leadership that is authentic to you. If you're an introvert, then be an introvert. You don't have to be an extrovert to be an effective leader. You know, if you like to lead through collaboration with people, then lead that way. You know, if you want to be the leader that, you know, feels compelled that you have to have all the answers, you're going to be leading a very stressful life. And so my answer really is, how do you know, what is your authentic way of leadership? And I think that's where it gets a little bit foggy, Dave, is because we've gotten these messages as how we're supposed to do it. And I really hope that the book opens up some room for people to think about, how do I want to do it? What does that look like for me?
Right. Well, I agree with you. I think that's a great place to start. In Running High Heels, you have a great quote from Marilyn Monroe in the introduction, which is, I believe it's something like, give a woman the right shoes and she can conquer the world. And then right after that, you say, I believe this statement to be true. And you talked about that just a moment ago, that it's really a metaphor for being authentic, being in your own shoes. How do we find that? I mean, I know that sounds silly. How do you find yourself? But I feel like we have media and MBA programs and all sorts of things telling us how to be everything but ourselves. How do you remember, how do you return to who you really authentically, how do you find your own shoes?
Well, how you find your own shoes is not necessarily looking at what you do, you know, or what your work is or your responsibilities or your role in leadership, but more about, if I can kind of paraphrase it, as how you be, which is when you look at, you know, how you are socially, when you look at yourself as to how you are at ease or when you're on vacation and, you know, how you like to spend your time, there's a lot of clues as to who you are authentically. that, you know, if you're a person that really likes to be with people when you socialize, then that probably means you're going to be effective as a leader through collaboration and through working the answers through with your team. If you find that in your personal time that you're really engaged in learning, then you're probably going to be a leader that you want to bring insights and knowledge and research forward into your organization. So it's really looking for those clues. And you know, I know that my executive clients look at me a little bit funny sometimes when I have them even think back to childhood of what they really enjoyed doing and, you know, what really was their passion and how could they bring that into their leadership role.
Well, that makes a lot of sense. So do you think women have a harder time than men doing that in the organizations? Do they face a different pressure to be different than who they are than male leaders do?
Well, it's an interesting question. Do they feel the pressure? Yes, they probably do feel the pressure. Do all men give in to that pressure? Not necessarily. I mean, I find that a lot of my work that I do within organizations that have male executives or senior leaders is that you know, it takes maybe a little bit more convincing that if they bring the softer skills of leadership to their organization, like transparency, empathy, you know, really being in tune to not only what their customers want but what their people want, that it takes a little bit of convincing that it's not just about people happiness, that it's really about the bottom line. And then when they can start to see some of those research results as to, you know, how profitability and productivity is impacted by those things, that they do come around. But what I find is that when they do, so much other magic happens. Not only are they freer in the workplace because suddenly their workplace, you know, the culture is much more engaged, people are excited about the vision, people are working more collaboratively together. But what I've witnessed also is, you know, men that I've worked with that have gone from, you know, kind of ignoring, you know, their own health or their own exercise regime or, you know, trying to take minimal vacation or sneaking out from the beach with the family to be able to check email. And instead, they're one of my clients just announced that instead of 4 weeks, he's going to Nantucket for 6 weeks and everything's turned off and he's just exercising every day. And so they start to live the life that gives them a lot of freedom.
Well, I think we all would like a little more to live our life that gives us more freedom. Speaking of freedom, I want to let people know that they have the freedom to engage in the chat room that is going on right now, live, at the same time this interview is going on. Deborah and I are going to join that chat in about 20 minutes. But if you're not in that chat, please join it. I think it's one of the best parts about enjoying this show is to share your ideas and questions with the professionals that are part of our community. And Deborah, here's an interesting thing. I think either I misspoke or you misheard, and I think it gives us an excellent opportunity to talk about something. I asked, or thought I asked, whether women feel more pressure to bend to a different kind of leadership. And I think you answered the question whether men do. And so I think this gives us a great opportunity to talk. What do men and women in our enterprise feel a different pressure to be different kinds of leaders? And how it seems like when you described how men should lead, it actually just sounded like you were describing some things that are kind of typically considered, you know, female in our audience or in our society, which I don't like those terms, but relaxing, spending time with your family, you know, those are things that men aren't supposed to do, blah blah blah, you know, and so do women feel a need instead to, you know, disengage from family, spend more time in the office, be more manly in some sort of stereotypical way?
Yes, and thank you for that clarification. So looking at it from the facet, do women feel that pressure in their roles, and also do they feel that they need to, you know, wear the man suit when they're in the office as well? And my And what I've discovered, especially with my interviews with women CEOs and running in high heels, is the answer is yes, and in a number of different ways. For example, one woman CEO shared with me that, who had four children and, you know, had worked herself up the executive ranks, that it wasn't until she was CEO for a number of years that she realized it would be okay to go to a junior high event for one of her children, her fourth child. But in truth, she hadn't gone to any of those events during the day as she was working her way up her career, because she had felt that if she went out of the office as a senior executive woman, that people would be saying she's doing, you know, the mommy female thing, whereas if a man left to go to his daughter's dance recital, everyone would be singing praises. And so she definitely felt that pressure of having to appear different, and then she realized really it was herself that was holding her back. She, you know, especially in her CEO years, I mean, she's the CEO of a company. Why can't she decide how she spends her time? But I also think that the, you know, really key to the IT area, Dave, is that a lot of the research really supports that, you know, women feel the pressure. They move up through the IT ranks, and then they get to certain levels, and then they feel the pressure that their voices are not heard, you know, as well as men, or they're not as equally promoted, or the ideas that they want to bring to the table of being creative, you know, are not as much supported, and that at certain ranks that they look to, you know, the male IT professionals to take the project forward, or even to hire outside of the company, where really there might be a woman who, you know, is available and talented enough for that position.
Right. Well, that's certainly something I think everybody in our audience can say they see in one way or another, if they want to admit it. I think the last time I saw the stats, only 20% of CIOs were women, and only 25% of IT professionals in general were women. That's clearly not representative of society. Is there a way, you know, for leaders, especially women, to be heard when they don't feel like they're being heard?
Well, one of my messages really is about that, you know, there's not going to be any Prince Charming saving any of us, man or woman, that so that you really have to elevate yourself, and that's, you know, kind of the metaphor of the shoes, and to move forward yourself. And I think, you know, one message I would like for women to hear is, you know, I firmly believe in proceeding until apprehended, is one of my lines, instead of holding back or asking permission. And I'll give you an example. I was working with one organization last year, helping them with their high potential identified leaders. And I had a man and a woman, both of the exact same role and responsibilities within the organization, both up for the next level of position. And the woman came into to coaching and said, you know, I know that the company is a great company that I work for, and they're going to let me know when it's time for me to move up to the next slot. I know that they're going to, you know, position me, you know, into the next role. The man arrived at coaching and said, Deborah, let's use this minimal time that we have together to, you know, get me ready so I can take on that next position. So oftentimes, men tend to nominate themselves for advancement, and you know, and at times, you know, women hold themselves back by not nominating themselves or not, you know, going into their superior's office and saying, all right, this is where I want to go in my career. How are you going to help me to get there?
Right. Well, it's interesting that you say that, because CEO of Microsoft, Satya Nadella, just got into trouble for saying essentially the same thing. But, of course, he said it from the point of view of women's equal pay, and being a man, it wasn't going to come out quite as well, obviously. So this is clearly a problem in IT, not only that women aren't nominating themselves, but also we're having a problem having a conversation about this, right? The wrong person says this the wrong way, and it's happening wrong. How can we have just a better conversation about this? I mean, I have to admit, I just feel uncomfortable being the man in this conversation. having this conversation, because I don't want to ask the wrong question or the dumb question or the sexist question. How can we do this better? You know, how can we have a better conversation about this that allows women to nominate themselves without, you know, being pushy, and it allows men to support them without looking, you know, silly too at the same time?
Well, and it's an interesting point that you bring up, and that's the biggest hesitancy, is that you know, women report that they feel like if they nominate themselves they're being pushy, or that's not how we are brought up, you know, to brag about, you know, our credibility and our experience and what we bring to the table. And so as a result, it might not feel, you know, good to be able to ask for what we need. But at the same time, it's that perception about being pushy that we need to change, because in truth, you know, a man, you know, meeting with somebody of influence and asking about, a client referral, or, over your golf game, about how you're going to get access to somebody, or even for that promotion, doesn't seem pushy in our society at all. So what if we just change the context about, you know, I think it comes back to the organizations themselves, that if we have organizations that fosters leadership in every individual and really allows their brilliance to shine, then it doesn't matter, you know, anything about gender or diversity. What we're doing is we're really looking at opening the door for each person to be able to, you know, migrate up their career path or be happy where they are, or to get the skills and resources that they need just to feel successful at the end of the day, and that none of it is being pushy. Instead, to build a culture where people can, you know, advocate for themselves and, you know, and they have meaning in their work by doing that.
Right. Well, I think as much as it's clear in society that we do have men who are willing to nominate themselves, I know whenever I've done it, it's scared the jeebers out of me. So I think one of the things that we have to admit is that it's hard for all of us. So let's not thinking that that, you know, it's not male or female, but it's just hard. So let's all do a better job of putting ourselves forward. One of the chapters in your book that I love is chapter 2 in Running with Heels is called Step Out with Feminine Swagger. I think that's just a great name for a chapter and a great thing to talk about. What's feminine swagger to you, and what's it mean, and how can you find it, and what are the benefits of stepping out with feminine swagger?
Well, again, it kind of comes back to your initial question about your authenticity. And, you know, when you are walking in your own swagger, when you really, you know, have an awareness of who you are, which also means, you know, your strengths and also your shadow side of your limitations. I mean, for instance, I had done a self-assessment some years ago called the Colby. And what it revealed about me is something that I knew, which is that I'm a quick start person, and that I can see, you know, read a Harvard Business Review article and I can immediately, you know, think of a whole program or how to bring it to clients. And I have enough, you know, vision in me that makes my assistants' head spin that have to implement the things around me. But at the same time, I also rank very low about the process piece. So, like, how do things get done? What's the timeline? So I've given myself permission to walk in my swagger of being that quick start visionary person, but also to know that I need to surround myself with people who are the process people, who can put the timeline and the structure to my ideas so that they really happen. So walking in your swagger is, you know, about really, you know, knowing yourself, and that also means embracing your bunions. Don't try and fix the things that you think you should be more competent in. Instead of, you know, surround yourself with the people who fill in your missing competencies and really, you know, strut your stuff with what you know and who you are.
Right. That makes a lot of sense to me. What is fascinating to me here is that we're not really talking about leadership with a capital L in the way MBA program books have done for decades. what we're really talking about, interestingly enough, is it seems like finding out more about yourself makes you automatically a better leader. Is that a fair thing to say?
Yes. Well, there's a couple of different parts of that, and in running in high heels, I actually spell out the word LEAD, lead, which is, you know, the core heart of the book. And so leadership really is about, you know, that leveraging your self-awareness, you know, about, you know, what it is that you need to lead. And I believe we're all leaders. Leaders are not a position. It's, you know, how we show up in the world. But the other part of that is also understanding that the E stands for engage, and that in today's world of leadership, we can't have all the answers just as leaders. As a matter of fact, you know, our workforce is not expecting or responding to us that we're the only ones that have the answers. And especially the incoming, you know, millennial generations expect to be part of the decisions that are made that affect their work. So the gift of that is, what if we relaxed in leadership and didn't have to know all the answers, but instead we engaged and enrolled our teams with, you know, the projects and the work that had to be done, and, you know, ask them to help us to facilitate, you know, being successful in those roles, because really the brilliance comes from leadership of all levels. So if you give yourself permission to not have to know all the answers as in the leadership of the big L of the past, but you instead you engage and you understand that the most effective leadership is done by collaboration today, then you can be a little L and still get results done by engaging with your people.
Well, speaking of engagement, one of the ways that you can engage with this radio show is to participate in our live chat, which is going on right now. If you're not in the live chat, this is a great time to get into it, because in about 10 minutes, Deborah and I are going to be joining that chat. So it's a great time to start getting some questions in there for her. Now, you mentioned the lead, Deborah, in your book, mm-hmm. and you mentioned the E in lead for engage. And now what I think is interesting is that the next letter in there, A, is for activate. And one of the things that I think is the hardest thing for a leader to do is to create action. And A for you is, you know, igniting a culture of collaboration and innovation. How do you go from engaging to actively doing? How do you do that? How do you ignite your culture around that kind of engagement that you're talking about?
Yes, and really I look at it in the simplest of ways is, in order to, you know, activate a culture of collaboration, creativity, inspiration, is that you need, you know, people and processes on board in order to, you know, be a profitable organization. And so, you know, how do you do that as a leader? And so I think of it as another like three E's. One is, you know, how do you engage your people? Is by connecting with them from a heart-centered place as to, you know, why are we doing this project? You know, what does it matter? Like, for instance, you know, imagine that you were working on a production floor and your whole job was to put, you know, screws into the side of a door, but you didn't know anything about what the door, you know, went to. It's quite different than if you knew that that door was the door that was going on a Jeep that was going to take a family, you know, riding along the beaches with the wind in their hair, and they were going to have that great experience. Then you'd probably feel a little bit differently, you know, about your work. And so in order to build a culture that's highly engaged, you have to, you know, pull back the curtain and engage your people by sharing the information with them as to, you know, why are we doing this work? And then you have to even enroll them, inviting them into the idea of the work that needs to be done by asking for their input. I like to use the analogy of, you know, you paint the canvas, but then you hand over the paintbrushes to other people for them to add their own colors to the project that needs to be done. And then you have to enable them, which is giving them the skill sets and the leadership and the resources that they need. So oftentimes the reason why cultures are not engaged is one of those three things are missing. You know, it wasn't communicated effectively to the people, they weren't really invited in to the vision, or they feel like, you know, we're already overwhelmed and we don't have the resources or the talent or even the leadership skills to do what you're asking us to do, so how can we do it? And that all leads to disengagement.
Right. Well, it takes a lot of guts to hand over the paint to somebody else and ask them to put something on your canvas, doesn't it?
Oh, it does. Oh, it definitely does. But believe me, the colors end up so much more vibrant.
Well, painters don't paint in groups, so I'm not sure about
yeah.
that. No, I'm kidding, of course, because obviously painters aren't an enterprise of hundreds of people. In your coaching experience, though, have you had to teach that kind of courage, and how do you teach it?
Yes, I have. Well, the way that I teach it is through, you know, first starting out with its educational component as to, you know, why should we lead differently in any way? And to have leaders to understand, and especially at the executive levels and anyone that's, you know, a manager of people can understand this, that it is harder work to get people to be accountable, to get people excited about the work that needs to be done today. I mean, everyone is working, you know, 60 hours a week with less resources and trying to have a life in the process. So to add one more thing to their plate, sometimes they're not as excited about. So we can't do things that we used to do of just saying, well, just do it and it's due on this date. So these extra steps, even though they seem like, really, Deborah, you know, you're asking me to do this with my people, that when I do paint that picture of, well, this is what happens when companies have made these shifts, where they really start to, you know, be transparent in their communication, where they start to, you know, be in deeper conversation with their people. And this is why some companies are having, you know, town meetings, their own social media sites in-house to be able to share information, or the CEO is doing videos. We're really starting a lot of more communication, is that there's proof in the pudding that, you know, the collaboration leads to a happy, engaged workforce, which leads to greater productivity, a better, you know, competitive positioning, and you know, ultimately profitability. So it's only by adding that insight of this is what the picture could look like and your bottom line could look like if we make these changes, do I kind of get my permission to to start shifting things around within organizations.
Right. Well, it sounds to me what you're saying is that so many people think leadership is control, and things are just too big to control anymore. It's time to trust and time to assume that, you know, you're just going to have to put your faith in your own people some, and that sounds like really brave leadership to me.
Yes, it is. And actually the word courage, you know, has been utilized even with some of my clients about, you know, that. And it's also, you know, even giving the courage to employees to, you know, fix a customer problem, whereas before they might have had to go through 5 levels of management, you know, to get approval for that. Because in truth, organizations need to be faster. They need to be much more agile than they were in the past. And if you have all this command and control, you just can't be agile in the same way.
Right. Well, I would love to finish this conversation talking about the D in your lead, which is for distinguish, which is, you describe as, it's how to figure out how to distinguish yourself and your organization. And at the base of the reason I wanted to have this conversation with you is partially that I wanted to help more women find how to be great leaders, because there are so many great leaders out there and they're being pushed aside. And so D for distinguish really excited me from the point of view that we might help people who are very talented but are not in leadership roles to distinguish themselves and be better leaders. So if, let's say you're a very talented woman and you're not being heard, how is it that you distinguish yourself and in the process your organization?
Well, one of the best ways of starting, you know, a conversation, because as you said, there's this uncomfortableness about seeming braggish or pushing your agenda forward, is what I refer to as talking about what's in the middle. So one way for anyone to really be heard is to talk about, you know, something that you have a shared consensus with. Like if you and I were working on pushing a project forward, you know, I might talk about how, you know, it was my, you know, my team, or we got the report, or we stayed late, you know, in order to get the project forward. So even though I'm talking about the project, in truth, what I'm telling you is it was my leadership and my commitment and my team that created that result. So the best way about being heard is figuring out what does the other person care about that I also care about, and starting from that circle of consensus and stating something, like to give you an example, if someone wanted to take on a new role that didn't exist, a new role of responsibility, to say that, you know, I realize we've been, you know, onboarding a lot of, you know, new people in our team lately, and what I have found, you know, is missing is that we, part of our orientation doesn't really cover this piece, but then when we kind of have our head to the grindstone, because we didn't cover that, our newcomers are kind of feeling a little bit behind. So what I was thinking about, you know, is I really like working with people. You know, I'm really adept at training. You know, what if I brought that, what's missing in our orientation, to the table and worked with some of our new onboarded people and, you know, got them established? And, you know, so what they're doing is they're just starting a conversation about how can I be seen in another level of leadership, or do something fun that I'm really excited about that serves the need that we both care about.
Right. Well, that makes a lot of sense, and because then you're doing things that you love and things you're good at as well.
Yeah.
Unfortunately, we're really out of time, but I want to end with something I found really inspirational, even though you weren't even talking to me when you said it. I found really inspirational in your introduction to the book. You're addressing women who are reading your book, and you say, it is your time. Because for the first time in business history, there are unprecedented opportunities for women at all levels to step up and lead. And I just wanted to give you a chance at the end to say, you know, why is it our time, or your time? And what can you do? You know, why now? What's special? And what are the opportunities from that that women can really take and run with after this radio show?
Yes, the why is because for the first time we actually have research that supports a woman's effect on the bottom line when we have women in leadership or women on boards. And so we have that for the very first time, and the studies that show that the workplace resonates with the collaborative way that women lead. So why is it now the time to step forward and claim your space? You know, and whatever level of leadership, big L or little L, that you're seeking, is to, you know, just know that you're making a difference in business today. You're making a difference for the people around you. And our workforce is longing for you to show up as a leader so that they can have more meaning in their work, and that your whole culture can, you know, be a more collaborative, you know, great place, great work environment, so that your company can thrive and even give back more into the world.
That's great. Well, I love that we had a conversation about leadership that wasn't about control, and I love that we had a conversation that may have been about one gender or another, but really, in my mind, it was really about finding authenticity, which I think is something we can all do a better job of. Unfortunately, we're out of time for today. Before we go, I want to tell everybody about next week's show. We will have Ashu Desai, founder of the Make School. Make School is designed as an alternative to traditional college IT classes. And trust me when I say you want to tune in for this, because Make School has a model that is either going to have you sign up or throw up in anger, depending on how you feel about traditional education. This is a mind-blowingly different way to think about IT. That's next Wednesday at 3 p.m. Eastern. Please tune in for that. And I'd like to thank you, Deborah, for coming by. Deborah and I are going to be joining you in the chat in just a minute. I'd like to thank you, the listeners, who tuned in for today's show. We couldn't do this without you. Thanks for tuning in to IT Life Radio. And remember, it's your IT life. The rest of us are just paying rent.